Accession number 13359, Mr. George Richardson, Reel 20.
Mr. J.S. Richardson, Reel 20. When did you first bump against the Germans, Mr. Richardson?
As we went forward the next day, we were heading towards what had been listed as Candy, which was turned out to be Condé sur Seille. It was a small village, some 12 miles inland in the Bocage country. Very green, hilly, undulating country. Lots of wheat fields, lots of cattle in the fields. A lot of cattle were lying wounded and dying with shell fire and bomb blast. We took Tilly Cecile quite good. On the road into Tilly Cecile, we were actually attacked by American aircraft and bombed, strafed by American aircraft. We had been given a yellow triangles, which we had in our gas mask cases. We all had to stand in groups with our yellow triangles so that the aircraft would recognise that we were British troops. But they still strafed us. I'd returned to normal signal office duties after Major Woods had taken up his duties again as second in command, because his initial task of surrounding Bayeux had been completed and we were more or less spread out again as a with all our ABC and the reserve company and going forward. We captured the village of Condé sur Seille, but in front of Condé sur Seille there was a railway viaduct, and some of our four platoons had come under heavy fire from there. There was one or two Germans walked into our lines. I was making a small recce out, and there was one came in with his arms up, and I just sent him back with my signal and told him to return as soon as he'd handed him over to somebody. He was just an infantryman. He had no arms, and he must have been fed up with the war. There was a small copse in front of Condé sur Seille, and this was, must have been about day four or even day five. We had a platoon commanded by an officer, and they had an anti-tank gun, and they were in this copse as a forward post in front of the main lines. They come under heavy fire, and quite a lot of them killed. What remains of the platoon returned that night, and a new platoon, with me, Colonel Wallace, said, sent out with under command of a second lieutenant.
Remember his name?
I can't, I wish I could. It being one of the newer officers that had joined us after we'd returned from the Middle East. We were in this what slit trenches that had been previously occupied by our previous platoon, and the one or two dead bodies lying about, which we hadn't time to see to. There was about 24 of us, and I was just sending ordinary messages back to keep contact with battalion headquarters. Just routine messages, all well, quiet. Suddenly around about, coming up towards midday, there was a big battle going off over to our right along this viaduct, the other side of the viaduct. I think it was B Company, were actually might have been D Company. Actually, in action, one of our singers, Lance Corporal Weir, was with the company commander, and he was giving a lot of information back. I heard him once or twice, but I'd been given a specific radio tune. There was only my wireless back to main headquarters, or so I thought. And I was just giving routine messages back until suddenly appeared a large Mark 4, could have been a Mark 5 tank, through a bridge under the viaduct. The tank immediately fired and knocked out the gunner and the 2-pound anti-tank gunner that was ranging down this small road towards the viaduct. A couple of dozen German infantry came through along with the tank, and we immediately started firing. I started sending broadcasts back, giving more or less a run commentary of the numbers of Germans and the action that we were taking. They were just lying. We had quite a lot of automatic weapons in our platoon, 2-inch mortars, and we were throwing everything we possibly could. I had fired around about 20 rounds of ammunition. I only had 4 rounds left. The Germans are slowly closing in. This is all taking part in around about half an hour. And we could see that we're going to be overrun. The tank was blasting away with his machine gun. We were too close for his large gun. The second lieutenant asked me what we could do to conquer them or get out of it. And I said, well, I can bring your artillery fire down on this position if you can give me the code, the map reference of where we are. He already knew it. He had it marked on his map. He gave me the map reference, and I gave the old signal, a murder map reference, 8-figure map reference. Can't remember what the numbers were. 3 minutes now. I'd already told the officer what I was going to do. I was going to range artillery on our position. And he'd told the sergeant, corporals, and men to get ready to run back. And they were all too willing to. And as soon as he shouted, up and go, as soon as I sent the message, I turned the dials off our stations, put a bullet through the top and a bullet through the bottom to knock the wireless out of commission. It was standing next to the dugout I was in, and I up and ran like hell back about 100 yards to where there was a hedge and a ditch behind it. We had bullets flying after us, and we got back. The artillery was, I'd asked for 3 minutes, but it probably took 5 or maybe 6 minutes before the artillery actually opened fire, and there must have been about 24 or 25 pounders had ranged on the one position. They all came down and shattered the whole of the wooded area, and after about an hour, we moved back. There were quite a few Germans lying dead. No sign of the tank. And we retook the position. That evening, we came back into our own lines. We were relieved by another platoon. But I think myself that the CO had reasoned that we had no idea where they were coming from and what was behind the viaduct, and to more or less fetch a listening post in closer to the battalion front lines. That was the closest I had been to actually firing at men with my own pistol. How many I hit, I don't know. I hit quite a few. So the officer, he was standing up firing, I was standing up firing, as well as giving a run commentary. I can't say how many we lost, but those that were wounded were only slightly wounded and got back. We'll probably only lose half a dozen, I think, out of our platoon. But we got back into our own lines, and I reported back to the signal officer.
Does that leave you, at the end of all that terrific excitement, does that leave you with a sense of fear?
Well, actually, I was elated. I was elated all that day because I was going around and I said, "Craw, what a Duffy, I don't want any more of them." I told the signal sergeant, Sergeant Teague, and, they just rubbed it off. But I think most of them thought that I was overrating what had happened. I didn't know that anyone else other than the battalion headquarters set was listening to what I said. But because the artillery had acted on my command, I knew that the artillery had been listening. I found out later that also the brigadier had been listening. And I was, along with the Lance Corporal Weyer, who was sent on 48 hours rest, who actually sent back to Beeshlawn for total rest because of the two Duffies who'd just been in. The rest of the platoon were just more or less in static positions there for a few days because we rejoined more or less in the same position. While I was back, we wanted haircuts, and so we thought we'd have a look back at BO, which wasn't very far back. Lance Colway and I walked back there, and we stopped by Red Caps, taken into the Red Caps captain in charge of the Red Cap, the divisional Red Caps. In fact, I don't think the 50 Div Red Caps, I think they were Army Red Caps. They were thought that we were deserters. They wanted to know where our battalion was and why we were there. So I told them that we'd come back to Bay Echelon and we'd been given permission to look and see if we could find a barber and have a haircut. I've still got in my peer book here a letter signed by this military police captain to say that I was in BO with permission from him and my unit for a haircut. I haven't shown you that one yet. I just found it since I saw you last. I'll show you later. So we didn't bother going any further. BO looked a mess. Well, I think it was in front of BO. There was that much stuff running around behind us. I'd never seen so much armour and everything, all just swanning about behind. It didn't seem as though they were going anywhere. We were up in the front line, fairly isolated, with not a lot of action going in front of us, but there was a lot of action going over to our right, with the Americans, and to our left, over the Carn area. We had our 48 hours rest and went back to battalion. We moved forward from Conyers-Essale as a full brigade. We crossed some Bocage country without encountering much opposition.
Was there an offset, an offshoot to this action?
Yes. 2 weeks after our initial landing, were more or less, I think our battalion was back in reserve. The brigadier came up and had our battalion there for a presentation of awards. There was one or two DSOs, I think it was one DSO issued out, I think two major awards, I'm not sure, I think so. One or two, obviously got the MC. This was for the initial landings and where we'd got to up to then. Lance Corporal Weir was given the military medal. I was mentioned in dispatches. When the Lance Corporal Weir was given his military medal, he read the citation out, and the brigadier read the citation out that he'd been with this platoon in this small corps that come hand-to-hand fighting with these Germans and the German tank. They'd asked for artillery positions, artillery to fire on the one positions to do this job, and I'd been listening to what actually was my talk. My citation was that I'd done well with the company in the action that we'd taken along the top of this viaduct. As soon as I saw it, I mean, we weren't allowed to speak on parade, but I straight away I said to her officer, I says, "But sir," I says, "that's my citation." He says, "I know." He says, "It's a mix-up. Can't do anything about it." So after we've fallen out, he actually went to the company ground and he says, "Wrong one's got the wrong military medal. But Joe Way had done well. He'd been put in for a military medal. I'd been put in for a military medal by just the platoon officer that had come back with me. But if it had been a company commander, I might have got one. Well, probably both got one. But as it was, I was quite happy. I was told, we'll see lots more action, George. You'll probably have tons of time to get another medal later on." But that's why I only have an oak leaf and not a military medal. A bit disappointing in the long run, but I was lucky to come out of that Duffy alive. I'd done what I'd been trained to do. After this, we advanced pretty well through the Bocage. We weren't seeing much action. We're advancing company, overtaking companies, spread out. Sometimes we were reserve battalion, 8th and 9th battalion were leading, and one would drop back. We captured a large area with a river flowing, a small river flowing through it. It was a large chateau. I remember that huge chateau. We went around and we found a huge wine store down in the cellar and refilled our officers' mess and our mess with some good spirits that we found down in the cellar. We didn't think it was stealing. We just thought that we'd captured this and it was something that the Germans had missed.
Do you recall the action at Verrières?
This was where we went to go over some cornfields. It was all corn which were just about ready for cropping. We came out from behind some large hedges and trees into some open ground, and immediately we came under Spandau fire. The whole of the company's platoons were outstretched. I was with the company commander at the wireless, and immediately we dropped down, but I saw the company commander receive a burst of machine gun fire. He dropped dead. His batman run up and lay over the top of him. He finished up with a burst of machine gun, lying dead. The company sergeant major, the runners, and the only two left of all of the company headquarters staff was myself and my signaller, Smudger Smith.
Do you recall the names of the company commander and the others?
Oh, I wish I could now. It's something that
Which company was it?
I don't know. Probably A. It was more often A company that I was with than any other company. Lance Corporal Way was usually with D company, I think. I think it might have been A company, but I'm not sure. But I suppose records will show that all these that were killed on this. And we'd only got about 15, 20 yards into this cornfield. The fire. I immediately opened up wireless with communications to say that sunray had gone down. Sun had set on Q, command, and that could please replace sunrise. Sunray. I closed communications and got down behind my wireless set. We were scrapping down because the corn was only about a foot, 15 inches high, and the machine gun was flying about. Round about an hour later, I heard some scuffling behind. Moved back round behind this hedge and met a captain that had been sent up. He asked where it happened, and I pointed and showed him the company command and the company, and all the platoons were lying. They'd got their entrenching tools out and they dug in as fast as they could. our objective was about 400 or 500 yards in front, where the Spandaus were firing from, the across the other side of the cornfield. Company commander, the new captain, took over and told the troops to start advancing. There was some Ben gun carriers came through, and one or two light armour tanks came through, and gradually start moving across the open cornfield, and the Spandau fire ceased. Some of them had just left the Spandaus and ran. I think there's about three Spandaus captured, but there must have been at least half a dozen that were firing. And we found, when we got across over this field, it wasn't just a hedge, it was a deep cut roadway behind the hedge, some 8 or 9 feet deep, and they could just lie there and watch over the top and see everything that we were doing, but we couldn't see them. And prior to this, we'd expected artillery barrage because we were doing a full frontal assault. We didn't get any barrage at all, but we did have the Royal Air Force flew, I think there was 18 aircraft that come down just in front of our positions, and first of all send bombs, then the missiles down, and then they went along Strafford. They were flying around for quite some time just before we actually went across the cornfields. I saw one of the aircraft being hit by probably anti-aircraft fire that was behind there for the German positions. It was brought down because they were diving down and they're quite low on the ground, these what do you call the aircraft? They were fighter bombers. Anyway, one of my mates of pre-war days had been a pilot in these, and I heard later that he had been brought down round about the 12th of June, and he's probably in that aircraft that we've seen shot down. I'm not sure where it could have been.
There were a lot of men, again, lost in this particular attack.
Yes, especially out of our company.
Did you have any feelings again that you'd been put into a situation which was impossible?
It was, absolutely, because we hadn't really reconnoitred this area. We didn't know about this sunken ditch that we were going to try and take. We didn't know the strength of the Germans in front of us. So we were more or less being put into similar to what the Germans did in the Somme, just sit there with machine guns and mow down the troops as they advanced over the open fields, and that's what we were doing. And our generals and everybody else should have known a bit better by now, but we were infantry, and that was our lot, and we did our best.
What happened next?
Well, we'd captured the positions that were set to. The rest of the battalions moved up and took up new positions in front of these positions, and the dead were collected in, the wounded were taken back to field ambulance, and I reported back to battalion headquarters, the signal officer. And as we were coming out, I said to Smudger Smith, I said, well, there you are. Because this was really his first, because he hadn't been in the Middle East with us. He was a Yorkshireman. And I said, I told you I'd bring it out safe. And he thought that was a load of somewhere like that, you know, because I had. I'd told him exactly what to do and how to get out of it. And that was actually the last big action that I did with any forward movement. After this, we moved on. The army, the American army, apparently had gained a good foothold after their hard struggle on their beaches. The army had overcome the Germans over at the Caen positions. We were reinforced a lot from men from the 10th and 11th Battalion Durhams. They had lost very heavily in the action over at Caen. The soldiers that had actually left, some of them were territorials that had joined as the war was opening up, and they had been drafted into the 10th and 11th Battalions as offshoots from the 60th and 9th Battalion Durhams. They had actually been, when we were in the Middle East, they had been sent to Iceland, and they came back from Iceland to do the invasion.
So these were quite good drafts.
These were more or less experienced DLI soldiers, but this was more or less their first action. They'd been in Iceland, but no action, enemy action. Although they'd seen plenty of bombing, and they'd been with the Royal Navy quite a lot. But they actually were more or less our own age, not just 18, 19-year-olds. They were more or less in the 20-year-olds, and they're not infantry trained. So they more or less took to our battalion straight away. We then, the army moved forward. There was one huge air force raid with about 250 bombers that went backwards and forwards over the top, dropping on what we come to recognise as Tillisus Hill, quite a large town, and absolutely flattened it. We went forward, and instead of going through Tillisus Hill, we went over the top of it. I think there's only remnants of the church standing. It was absolutely flat. The Royal Air Force had seen of that. As we were doing this, the Americans had done a big pincer move around our right. Our rest of our army group, the Canadian army, were moving round from our left, and the main 50th Northumberland Division, along with the 7th Armour, were moving forward quite well through this area.
Were you fighting in pretty rough country?
Actually, our battalion did no more actual forward action then for quite a long while. It was all rough country. We were seeing quite a lot of dead bodies, quite a lot of paratroopers. I think they were lying there right from the initial landings. They'd probably flown too far inland. Or whether it had been sent to capture Tillisus Hill or what. We should have captured Tillisus Hill in our first few days. We were nearly 18 miles inland when everybody else was fighting back on the beaches. A squadron of light armoured cars had set out for Tillisus Hill, and they were actually strapped by the American Air Force and all set on fire. I was overlooking some high ground down on the road, leading right out in the distance of Tilly, and would see these burning armoured cars, and that absolutely threw the whole action out of order. There must have been remnants of the Guards' armoured. They pulled back. It wasn't their kind of war at all to be knocked out by our own air forces.
What date did you get through Tilly?
This must have been somewhat 3 weeks after D-Day, because we'd seen some action in front of Condi, and then I don't know. I didn't keep a diary. I didn't keep dates, but it must have been around about 3 weeks after D-Day, from towards getting into July.
What was the strain upon yourself and the battalion fighting pretty rough?
Yes, we were sleeping rough too. We were out in the open air, sleeping under our greatcoats, with our one blank that we had. We saw quite a lot of bright, hot, sunny days, but we also saw quite a lot of rain. And the smell of the burning dead cattle that were in the fields was terrible. We had pioneer cars coming up with bulldozers, making huge graves and shunting the dead cattle in because the whole place stank of death. After that, we found out that there was been a big major breakthrough, and the Germans are trying to escape a pincer movement.